Welcome to the Omni Gamers Club podcast, the podcast for games on all platforms, including pool tables. I am Daniel Winter.
I am Mark Uessa. Yeah, the pool table is a gaming platform, isn't it? Quite literally.
Yes, yeah, there's a couple of video games that I saw that are utilizing that as well. But quite a few games like pool, snooker,
billiards.
Yep, I don't know what you call it in Canada. Like what's the primary pool table game in Canada, would you say?
I actually quite rightly don't know the difference between pool and billiards.
No, same.
But I see billiards halls, pools halls, yeah.
Interesting. Well, write in and let us know, what game do you play on a pool table?
Yeah, the only thing that's properly a Canadian game that's played physically is Crokinole, I understand, is Canadian in origin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Popularized Montreal, I think it's... Is it?
Yeah, quite possibly. Yeah. I know
it sounds right. Don't know what it is.
Yeah, that's what the legend says. I still don't have a board, and I would really like to, because it looks pretty fun. I like dexterity games.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. There was a game, it's called like Canoogle or Canuka or something. It's like Crokinole, but like snooker rules. And that looked really interesting, so I'd like to try to track down that sometime.
Right, and then there's that Indian game that's kind of like Karam,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think it's a hybrid of that, I think.
So many worlds to our Omni Gamers menu.
Yes, that we have very little actual knowledge of, but vague knowledge of a lot of different games, shall we say.
That's right.
Shall we get to some games? So this is the playlist where we talk about everything else that's not our featured game. So next episode we'll be talking another Crab's Treasure, and today's the playlist, we'll be talking everything else and some news. So what's news to you, Mark?
Yeah, there's just so much. Obviously, I think, what did they call it on Steam? They call it the summer showcase of summer showcases.
It's like the dozen of disconnected press conferences previously known as E3 or the Jeff Keighley Fest.
Right. It was actually quite overwhelming that I didn't intentionally watch anything because I couldn't choose where to start.
Yes, that's the whole metagame in itself.
Yeah, all I saw was bits and bobs, and just like earlier today, just even an hour or two ago, I started watching a few trailers, some exciting things there. But I'll just mention a couple of things because I don't know much too deeply. I saw this brief trailer from a new game called Tenjutsu. It's by Devolver Digital. Ah. It has this amazing 90s style anime intro video, which really hooked me in because that was my, that's my wheelhouse. Definitely just really looked quite authentic. Like they must've gotten some professional animation help there. And as for the rest of the game, it looks pretty awesome. It seems to have light RPG elements. I really love beat 'em ups with like a twist, like Streets of Rage, River City Ransom. Those were my jam back in the day. So this seems to be along those lines, but knowing Devolver Digital, there'll probably be more interesting, really crunchy gameplay twists in there somehow.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to check out the Devolver press conference yet, but those are always a lot of fun with some weird, wacky framing devices that usually sort of break the fourth wall in some fun ways. So looking forward to checking that out.
Right. How about yourself?
Yeah, I don't want to get too in the weeds of all the games we saw. I was excited by the surprise announcement of Night Springs, the Alan Wake expansion. That's sort of breaking the fourth wall. It's the Twilight Zone show within the game, within the many layers deep, shall we say? And I haven't had a chance to track it down. I
know that Alan Wake 2 didn't meet sales expectations, so maybe this could give it a bit of a shot in the arm.
Yeah, I know there's all kinds of sales on it right now. It's an odd game. I don't think it entirely worked as a game, but as a multimedia experience. It was a lot of fun just playing through the narrative and seeing how they used the canvas of games to some really unique effects, shall we say. I'm pretty sure I discussed that on a previous episode. Maybe go check that down. So looking forward to revisiting Night Springs.
Very cool. I won't mention much in terms of specifics from the summer showcases, just because I don't know. The trailers are out there. Go watch them yourself.
Yeah. I mean, after all, it is his ads in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. I was definitely like saw some promising things. It wasn't just filler. There were some really promising twists and turns there, but it's just impressions at this point.
Mm. Well, one thing I want to shout out rather than specific games is there's a couple of initiatives from Blumhouse, the horror movie studio, and Outer Sloths, which is a new sort of offshoot of Inner Sloths, I think it's called, the makers of Among Us. And they've both started separate initiatives to basically fund a whole bunch of independent games, which is really exciting. I mean, obviously, video games are in a tough spot right now, and any way that's... any way to fund games that's independent, separate of like venture capitalist initiatives is always good to see. And from their little showcase, there look to be a lot of weird out there games that wouldn't otherwise get a chance to shine.
Nice. Well, I think our listeners, watchers, viewers know that we like weird indies on this channel, among other things. So I'm all for that. I want indie studios to exist and for creators to create cool games. Right. Okay. I'll mention a couple of news things, not video game related this time. I'm going to mention a tabletop Kickstarter, which should last until the end of June. So we have a little bit of time left if you're catching this in the week that this episode comes out. It's for a game called... It's a game that's existed for a little while, but here's a chance to get a reprint. So this is called Cyberpunk Red Combat Zone. And now this isn't the tabletop traditional RPG. This is a tabletop tactical combat the miniatures game.
Yeah, I think I heard about this.
Yeah. It's a miniatures combat game, and it's by a noted sort of smaller tabletop minis a game company called Monster Fight Club. Okay. And I don't know a lot about this other than the fact that the minis look really cool. The art looks great. The core set is like $160 or something like that. Comes with the playmat, two factions, starter set, you know, about pretty typical for a minis game starter set. Comes with a bunch of motorbikes this time, like Akira style cyberpunk motorbikes, and who doesn't love that? And it comes with a massive, pretty much drop ship for your what are they called, MacTech or TechSec, or
but can I you put your little called. Minis inside the big dropship mini?
Well, I don't not, know not if mini, you actually can, because there's probably like bench seating or supposed to be in there, but it's supposed to drop down, and maybe it's just like an evac point or something like that. So I won't say much about this, except that I saw a little intro video from previous game show or something, games fair or something like that coverage. And this game among tabletop games looks a lot more board gamey in terms of the rule set. Like the way that the characters activate is very intuitive. Basically, there's these like icons. There's Ted. there's basically these icons that come on all the character cards, and if they have certain icons, they're basically stronger, they have more powerful effects, and when you activate them, you trigger them off, and when they get wounded, some of those icons are reduced or they're diminished. So an elite icon steps down, and so it basically weakens their performance overall. So it has a very cool mechanical way that it plays out. And so I'm excited about this project. I don't quite have the funds. I don't quite have $160 kicking around right now.
That's the thing with miniature games, they quickly balloon.
Yeah, exactly. So if anyone wants to be, you know, a kind soul and donate to, you know, be my secret Santa or something like that, please put this on the list for me.
Yeah, I would like to look at a miniature game at some point for the sake of like covering a different type of game that we haven't covered before. I saw that Mutant Year Zero has one that just came out, or about to come out, I believe. It has getting some good reviews, so I'm keen to check that out sometime, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. Free League, that publisher is kicking butt all around. Of course, they're the people that bring you things like Mutant Year Zero, the tabletop RPG, but also... what is it? Tales from the Loop. Mm-hmm. And
games like Alien and Lord of the Rings is the other one.
The One Ring tabletop system.
Another Kickstarter I wanted to quickly shout out. So this is a board game called Nawali. I had heard about this from Shut Up and Sit Down a few months ago and had been trying to track down a copy since, and was excited to see that it's a second edition now on Kickstarter. So it's a little easier to get it shipped up here to Canada. So this is a deck, not really a deck building game. It's a card dueling game. It's not too dissimilar to something like Inscription, the video game, where you have a small hand of cards of various creatures. You're playing them into lanes, a bit like a battle line and those other sort of lane-based card games. And and when you take control of a lane, you're basically getting these gems. And there's a real tug of war about needing to have a certain number of the gems. It's very much a zero-sum game in terms of the push and pull of the gems going from one side to the other. So it's sort of, it's like an Aztec theme. So all looks very authentic and traditional art there, which looks really cool. So it has a really unique aesthetic, and I love the idea of that. You draft the creatures at the start of each game, which, you know, I always have a need for drafting, so excited about that. I did speak to the creator briefly, and he said that yes, Inscription was a big influence, and that they're adding a solo and co-op version, like an adventure mode, in the second edition. So that sounds really exciting too. So yeah, that was an insta-back for me, Nawali.
Very cool. I should mention that the last game I just mentioned, Cyberpunk Red Combat Zone, is called Reprint and Vehicle Mayhem Kickstarter, by the way, if you're looking for the full title. Yeah. The last project I'll speak about during the news section is an upcoming Kickstarter, so it hasn't started yet. Okay. So the game for the upcoming Kickstarter is called Unstoppable. I know nothing about this game except that it is set in space. Mm-hmm. And it's from a noted board game designer, John D. Clare.
Oh, I haven't heard of this one. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just starting to see ads from it. You know, I like sci-fi stuff. Mm-hmm. So this game is just on my radar. I don't know much about it at all.
Right?
He did Space. He did so much stuff. I think Ecos, if I'm not mistaken. And then that Mists, what is that? That card sleeving, you know, the card crafting game where
with
the transparent sleeves. That was Cubitos him as well.
Of his, I haven't quite enjoyed. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just all around. And I can't say I love every one of John D. Clare's games, but they are very creative for the most part. Very innovative.
Gimmick factor? I don't not to mean that as a derogatory term, but a lot of the fun unique sort of mechanics.
Yeah, I like a designer that swings for the fences. What can I say? Oh, and I did forget, there was one more thing, I apologize, but this is another short one I don't know much about, but there's another upcoming Kickstarter from this time, the tabletop RPG side. It's the Stormlight Archive RPG Kickstarter from Brotherwise Games, and I believe that this is associated with, or maybe set in one of Brandon Sanderson's
Fantasy right. Books? Yes, I'm not familiar with that series at all, but I know Brotherwise have been putting out a lot of material in that setting. They had a line of miniatures for the Stormlight. I think miniatures to go with the RPG.
Yeah. So I don't know anything about this at all, except I like innovative RPG settings, especially if they come from, I don't know, have a literary angle to it. Brandon Sanderson's fantasy stories aren't 100% my thing either, but they're also very interesting. They try.
One thing I always say about them is that his sense of magic feels like it's very much designed like an RPG. So it's come full circle.
There you go. Yeah. So that's what I'm excited about coming from Kickstarter.
Excellent. Okay, yeah, that's quite a few Kickstarters to check out. Maybe I'll drop the links for all of those in the show notes, so check those out. So from the future of games, let's take a look at what we've been playing lately.
Absolutely. Why don't you start us off?
Yeah, well, just quickly, jumping back to the not E3 Summer Games Fest, whatever you want to call that, a lot of those games have demos up already. I think it was the Wholesome Games one. Wholesome Games Direct, I think it was called. Like every second game, demo available now. Say the words. But in theme with our featured game that we'll be discussing next episode, I had a look at Crab God. It's the year of the crab. Crabs are very in right now. So this is basically a little bit like Kingdom New Lands, if you're familiar with that. It's like a strategy 2D game. Almost a little bit like Lemmings to an extent, in that you have a variety of followers that are running around automated, and you can assign them roles like gardening or protecting your reef in this case, or worshipping to collect resources, and so you're doing that. But then once you hit a certain threshold, you can migrate to the next level. And so it's very much like a little mini roguelite progression system. And that in between you're leveling up your little crablings. You have like, I think you start with like four little baby crabs, and you're leveling them up, but getting new ones as you progress. And each time they level up, you get like a little roguelike random boost, like, oh, they're better at attacking, or they're better at worshipping. But some of them are quite unique. So you can really specialize each of your workers and sort of give them a bit of an identity as you progress. And so, yeah, it was really cute. Because I really like Kingdom New Lands. It's a great game. That's one of my favorites. And this is adding a sort of bit of a roguelike twist to that, and a very, very cool vibe. You've got these the plants that you're laying out in your gardens attract certain types of fish. So there's also this simulation element where different types of fish are coming in, like a bit of an aquarium that you're watching, basically, trying to get all the different fish to come in and interact with your garden. So that one looks really cute.
Yeah, that sounds very interesting. I like games that have systems that build upon other systems, clearly. I haven't played any of those Kingdom games. It's just a serious gap in my library. But
there's a new version of that coming out soon. I think there's a new Greek skin of that. They keep reskinning that game.
Right. There's like a modern, there's like a 1980s version or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, thankfully those games are pretty cheap, I think, so they're easy to acquire. I haven't been playing much in terms of video games myself, aside from a couple of library rentals. I put a bunch on order because I figured, oh, I'm going to be 52nd in line. These will be coming in the future.
And they all come at once.
They all come at once, exactly. So I've learned my lesson. So I wasn't able to play much of them because I had to finish Another Crab's Treasure on deadline. But one game I did manage to play for a short while is called Live Alive, or is it called Live Alive or Live Alive? It has the words L-I-V-E in it, that's for sure.
Live Alive.
Yes, Live Alive, I believe it's called. And I played it on Nintendo Switch. This is an old game that has been on my radar since the 1990s.
Was it SNES it was originally at?
It was originally a Super Nintendo Entertainment System game. Although I don't think it ever came out on SNES. Right. I think it was Japanese
release.
Super Famicom game. Mm. And I was sorely disappointed that it never came out over in the West. So it was just stuck in my brain, lodged there for nigh on 30 years. And until it finally came out, and then I just didn't jump on it. So I rented it, played it. It's very reminiscent, or maybe the other way around, of games like Octopath Traveler.
Yeah, just thinking
where you can start from various points. There's a whole cast of characters, and this game, it's sort of like, I guess, what's the word? Chrono Trigger or whatever, where there's like multiple time periods. And the characters
multiple are storylines that are sort of independent of each other.
Right. And so the first place it starts you off is, do you want to go with this futuristic character? Do you want to go with this samurai character? Do you want to go with this cave person, essentially? So it's spanning through all these time frames. And I thought, hey, I guess I'll just start at the beginning. So I started with the prehistoric person. And it's very like, I don't know, I guess, retro picture of what the ancient prehistory looked like. It's very Ooga Booga, basically. Not much more advanced than the Flintstones. I don't know. It's got some really questionable old school choices in there in terms of storytelling. I guess it was interesting in the fact that storyline is told entirely without words. Basically, because they presume that there's no spoken language, they just kind of grunt, and then they have like pictograms.
It's only so much you can express with that pixel art, right?
Yeah, and so the word boxes will have like exclamation marks, and then like the picture, the headshot of a character, or the headshot of an enemy, and so it's telling a little bit of a story in a very rudimentary, primitive way in more ways than one. And I was playing this while I was playing a few other things, and I, you know, it kind of got me, part of me, excited because it's very retro. It's reminiscent of games from my Super Nintendo heyday from my youth. But you know what? It's just not capturing me. That particular title. Maybe I didn't give it enough time, or maybe the other games I'm playing right now are more interesting to me, but that game, Live Alive, did not hook me. Even newer retro-minded games like the Eiyuden Chronicle games, both of them have hooked me more, maybe just because they're actually newer games, and they're a bit more polished and a little bit more modern sensibility to them. This one is definitely old school. It does have that kind of 2D HD look, but other than that, it plays like an old school RPG. So I guess, I don't know, it's just feeling a little long on the tooth.
Yeah, they're definitely time commitments, those games. So you want to feel invested in the characters and the story if you're going to get around to finishing it.
Yeah, and I don't know. I guess I'm feeling that sort of RPG dread again now that I've finished a game for the podcast. Now I'm thinking about the next game to jump on, and then lo and behold, wouldn't you know it, Xbox Game Pass just happens to dump 280-hour-plus RPGs on us with Octopath Traveler 1 returning to Game Pass and Octopath Traveler 2 for the first time on Game Pass, one game that I've been meaning to play for a while.
Yeah, I similarly bounced off Octopath Traveler 1 last year, but I've heard that the second one is an improvement in every way, vastly superior, and it like fixes a lot of the issues. So I'm looking forward to trying that out and seeing how I get on with it. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. I'm going to hit that one up next, but I also have that sense of dread, is like, what am I getting into here? But well, we'll handle my psychological problems in the future.
Well, speaking of library holds, I had one come in this last week, but also didn't have a lot of time, unfortunately. That is one that you've talked about a bit, is Unicorn Overlord.
Oh, yes.
So, also a Japanese RPG, but more of like a tactics game. And what I wasn't entirely prepared for is how much of it was a sort of auto battler. Like, most of the gameplay, per se, is in managing menus and the squads and positioning and setting up the sort of almost the programming the abilities of the characters, like Final Fantasy XII. They basically set up their priorities for what priorities they, what abilities they should prioritize, what targets they should prioritize, and upgrading equipment and other mini side quests. And so a lot of menus to navigate. And then you get to the battle and then you just watch your squad of enemies auto attack the enemy squad of units. So I very quickly fall into this habit of just auto complete the battle, unless it's a complete washout, which it is most of the time. You generally want to maneuver your units, so that's going to be a washout, right? And if otherwise, I might watch it if it's going to be close, but it's usually pretty predictable as to what the results
going to be. Like other games, a game that I'm reminded of that I have some history with is like the Advance Wars series, right? Have you played any of those?
No, I've played like Fire Emblem is my sort of closest experience with those sort of tactics games.
Okay, I think there's other strategic games that do this as well. A lot of them are like space battlers, like maybe even, I guess even Sid Meier's Civilization does this to a degree, is that they give you the odds, right? They give you the odds before you do the fight.
Exactly, yeah.
And so the strategy layer is not tactical. It's like the opposite. It's strategic.
It's a strategy game.
You choose where to send the soldiers and what types of soldiers, and they're responsible for fighting it out, right? It's like you're the general, you oversee the topological view of the war, and the soldiers fight the battles. Is the way I look at it. And it's, for me, it's a really ideal way to play out a strategy game, because you know, you don't have to micromanage. You can. You totally can micromanage with the very FF12 like sort of if and or conditional AI programming that you can do. And also a big area that you can customize is the gear. You can load up the gear in addition to those tactics. So I like that a lot, but there's no like kind of micromanaging like where you're positioning the soldier behind.
I very rarely have patience for that sort of thing. Yeah, but yeah. It feels a little bit like a mobile game, just taken to 11. And how much of it is menu based? Watching meters go up. Oh, your honor system, your renown meter has gone up. Your character level has gone up. Everything is constantly meters going up in various ways. Feels very Skinner box in that regards, but satisfying. It does feel like the sort of game I actually want to play in small bursts. So yeah. That's partly why I didn't get through much of it. Just enough of a taste to know that I'd like to play some more. If I can track it down sometime.
Yeah, when I own it, and when I was playing it intensely, I was playing it almost too intensely, and I needed to take a step away because you could, you know, just play that game every minute, just one more battle. And I think it's too much of its own thing to do that for me personally. I need to mix it up with different styles of games, but I'm still enamored with the design, and I think if you're going to have a real-time strategy game on console, that's, you can't do much better than that.
Excellent. One very quickly shout out one other game that I briefly tried, that is friend Suzanne from the Salt and Sass podcast gave me a recommendation for a game called Rack and Slay. So this is a basically pool roguelike. each screen is a pool table with holes sort of randomly spawned and enemy balls scattered around. Some of them have special abilities, like they'll explode or they'll shoot out little mini balls when you hit them. And you just have one ball and you have to basically knock your ball into the enemy balls, get them down the holes. And there's treasure and things to collect, traps to watch out for. Basically from the description alone, you'll know if it's a game for you. It has the roguelike progression. Each map, after you complete each pool, table, board, you have a choice of three treasures. You can buy some little mini upgrades. And so you're gradually building out some sort of synergies and power levels and like bombs and like lightning strikes you can get. So it's all very silly, very chaotic. Perhaps a little much for me. It's a fun gimmick just to mess around with. It feels a little unpolished at the moment. Very sort of flash game in its sort of UI. I'd like to see that polished up a little bit. You have to basically figure it out for yourself. There's very little explanation of how it functions. But just if the concept alone is of interest to you, it's like $5, I think, on Steam. So it's a cool little gimmick of a game if you're really into roguelikes and want something unique in that space.
That's cool. I don't know the perspective at all, but is it anything like Peggle or the Peggle roguelike Peggle?
Yeah, but rather it doesn't have the physics in terms of going from top down. You're looking at the table top down as if it's your screen, right? Right. And so you can direct the direction of, so you direct your ball and the power level of it, and then fire it off and see what happens. Largely, I seem to have a magnet for going into the hole every time, so I'm just not very good at it.
Yeah, that age old kind of 2D pool / putting green mechanism from ages gone by. Yeah. Cool.
That is Rack and Slay.
Nice. I am vaguely interested, so you'll have to tell me more about that as it develops. Okay. I'm going to move over onto the tabletop space. I've not been playing much there. I've been playing more on the role-playing game or war game side, but I'll mention briefly a new game I just tried out. I have a couple games going on right now. It's the first, I believe, to my understanding, TCG that's hit BGA, so Board Game Arena, and it's called BSS, or Battle Spirits Saga. And this is a, a Bandai Namco, or Bandai game.
Yeah.
And it's very much got that Japanese TCG kind of flair to it, like any old Konami game or things like that. And it's pretty simplistic so far, but I'm kind of just really interested in how BGA pulled this off. There's a full-on deck construction system in BGA. There are, I think, 6 starter decks, and you can basically set yourself up a solo game on BGA, and you can mix and match decks, presumably according to the rules of the game, and construct your own deck any way you want to, and challenge enemies. It is 1v1 dueling type game, as you might imagine. And I'm just kind of getting the feel for it. Most of it's very familiar, of course. Very loosely based on Magic the Gathering, I guess a little bit closer to a Yu-Gi-Oh kind of feel. Not very precise feeling, but it has an interesting mechanism where basically kind of like, what's the game, like Splendor, some of the cards you play out become like fuel to make future card plays cheaper. And you have this secondary currency, which I forget what they're called. They're cores. They're called cores. And there's like one special core and a bunch of like weak cores. And when you lose life, the life point you lost becomes fuel to you.
Oh, okay.
So you, the person on the defending side of a strong kind of assault, can gain stronger for a counter assault.
It's a bit of a catch-up mechanic.
Yeah,
possibly. That balances things out. Okay.
Right. So they're doing some interesting things there. I just don't know how much long-term depth it has, but it's intriguing enough that I'll keep trying to play a little bit.
Yeah, I'm curious to check out the starter decks at least. I mean, I struggle with deck construction in person, so any online system needs to be pretty robust to hold my patience with that. But I'll just check out the starter decks at least. And I think I saw there was like an Evangelion-themed like spin-off of it. Maybe it's only in the physical decks.
I'm sure it's like a cross-branding thing, like Fallout Magic the Gathering, right?
I will say there was previously a TCG on BGA. Perhaps it's not on there anymore. Altered, I think it was called, which was on Kickstarter last year.
Yeah,
I know. Right. I think it was only a brief window it was available as a demo.
Yeah, I actually, now that you mentioned, I did play Altered it a bit, but it didn't leave a very strong impression on me. All I remember is there was a bit of like this tug of war thing. Kind of reminded me of this old Kanitsia game called Blue Moon City.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if you recall that one.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it didn't have a wide release. I actually own a physical copy. It's a bit rare, I think.
He was playing a lot with the sort of Keyforge idea of like unique decks and unique cards and everything, I think. So secondary, big on the secondary market, which kind of isn't a huge appeal for me.
Right. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I also have not actually played much new in the board game realm lately. It's just it's summer. Everyone's busy. Everyone's out doing things, and like my kids got swimming lessons now, and it's warming up out there. So I want to talk quickly about a game that I've been wanting to talk about the last few episodes and haven't had time. That is Kutna Hora, the City of Silver, I think is the tagline from Czech Games Edition. So this is it's in the realm of sort of beige economic Euro games about named after a city, except it's not beige, it's silver. Very, very monochrome, or duochrome, I guess, like black and silver. So very striking graphic design. But as you start building out this central town, they all have these really like neon colors. So those buildings really pop. But mechanically, just quickly, basically has a simulated economy, sort of a closed system with these cardboard computers where there's a deck of cards with these, they slop into these little cardboard sleeves with windows in them. And as certain things are triggered in the game, you move these cards back that reveal new numbers that would like increase the supply and demand of the various resources. But then if you start building a lumber mill, for example, increases the supply, prices will go down. So this real push and pull system going on there. But the really interesting thing is that there's six resources, each one represented by a guild. Each player can only has access to three guilds. So I might have lumber, beer, and silver ore. And you might have lumber, food, and contracts, I think it's called. So you and I are competing on lumber, but I'm competing with someone else completely on beer. And so you have a rival, at a four-player game at least, you have a different rivalry with each other player instead of trying to monopolize a particular market in some really interesting ways. It's a fascinating sort of economy, little simulation, a little bit like, I mean, I have not played any 18XX games. I assume it scratches a little bit of a similar itch. It feels a little bit like you're investing in a company when you build these buildings and sort of increase the the supply. But yeah, really, really interesting levels of interaction on sort of fighting on the different fronts of those economic rivalries, and the cardboard, the simulated sort of economy of those little cardboard holders are quite novel. That's Kutna Hora.
Okay. It sounds like an intriguing one of those European economic simulator games.
It's not as boring as it sounds. I will say it is quite dynamic in the moment. I really enjoyed that one.
Nice. All right. I'm going to talk about a couple of games on the more tabletop role-playing game / wargaming side. You know that's an area that I've been starting to dive into with more passion lately. I'm happy to report that my Minis painting journey has started. I recovered this Minis painting starter set that my kid bought from Rain City Games here in Vancouver. They started very roughly painting one model and then gave up. Mm-hmm. I knew that they had that kit kicking around, so I just bought it off of them.
Gotta get to it before the paint dries up.
Right. So I'm going to start that. I sprayed a bunch of minis that I had from a board game, actually. I realized I had a bunch of miniatures that I could test paint with. So I have a Battletech starter set, one of the newer editions. They come with like two minis each, plastic minis, and then with some standees. So I took a couple of the minis from there, spray prime those, and then I took a bunch of minis from this board game called Massive Darkness. Are you familiar with this one?
It's like a Diablo fantasy dungeon crawler thing.
Kind of. Right? Funny enough, I've never played it. I own this giant box with like 60 minis or something in it.
Can't play it until you've painted every single mini, Mark.
Yes. I did learn that. So, and I'm following through. I'm finally following through. But the cool thing about that box is that it has like 60 minis. So it has like 10 orcs and 8 dwarves and like 16 elves.
The thing I have no patience for is painting the same miniature 10 times.
Oh, well, here I'm looking at it as practice. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take 3 and I'm going to practice it one way, totally fail, hopefully learn some lessons, and I'm going to take 3 more and paint them and improve, hopefully bit by bit, and by the time I'm done all 60, I'll have a lot of experience under my belt. That's the plan anyway. So we'll see how that works out.
I will say it's never been easier to learn how to miniature paint. I think it's Army Paint to have the new Speed Paint line. Yes. And other brands have a similar product where it's basically when you the paint separates when you put it onto the model, it separates into multiple layers basically. So it does the depths. The darker layer going into the grooves, the lighter layers going onto the sort of the ridges, and so it sort of self highlights itself. It's not going to be a particularly robust, like it's not going to look amazing, but like if you stagger it in certain ways, you can get a serviceable mini in a fraction of the time.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm aiming for, is serviceable. Just
don't look closely.
Yeah, just not horrible. So I'm starting from a low bar. Thankfully, my friend and neighbor and GM, Paul, has sent me like a dozen starter videos as well. Mm. He's quite experienced, and I think I mentioned previously that he's been helping me print out some 3D models that I've downloaded the STLs from online. So it's basically a whole new world. I'm excited.
Previous guest of the show, Jamie Daggers, she streams miniature painting, has a bunch of tutorials. So if anyone's interested in getting into that side of the hobby, go and check out her content out.
Yeah, good point. I should check out Jamie's videos. Another side of it, I've been doing mostly reading. Basically, my D&D campaign is winding down. You mentioned, of course, summer's here. So basically, people just kind of peter off, right? They go on vacation, some are moving. Yeah, they do weird things like go camping or spend time with family. So our D&D campaign is sort of winding down, and this is an opportunity for me, who's sticking around for the most part. So I'm going to try and dig out a few more systems, do some more one-shots. I'm very interested lately in a series of games from Son of Oak, who is a publisher who's most famous for an RPG called City of Mist. Okay. I'm not sure if you've heard of it.
No.
But it's a modern RPG with fantasy. It's sort of like a hidden world sort of game.
Okay.
So it's a PBTA based game, but unlike most PBTA games, there's no attributes. Everything is tags. Everything is tag based. So you make a character by basically like drafting four cards that have about a dozen, 10 or so attributes on it, tags, and you choose 4 out of 10. And so some of those are going to be mundane. Like you are like a, I don't know, EMT or something like that. And you work the emergency room at night or something, and that's your day job. But unbeknownst to others, you're actually the reincarnation of the big bad wolf, or you are secretly, I don't know, Hansel and Gretel or something like that. So you take on, embody these sort of like mythical or folklore characters.
Reminded me of Fables, the comic series.
Sure, yeah. I'm sure it was inspired by a series like that. You're not literally the big bad wolf. You are just, no. You just take on their persona, like their energy or something like
channeling
that.
Channeling wolf energy.
Yeah, so the City of Mist, I think people love it or hate it because it is different. And that's what interests me. Like, you have to balance the way you earn experience in this game is if you actually sort of like fail at keeping up your personas, because you're sort of caught between worlds, right? You're either mundane and trying to keep up your daily routine, or you're leaning into this fantastical side.
So you're kind of ends.
You're conflicted. And what I really like about it is, like I said, no attributes. Basically, the players, when the GM or the master of ceremonies is presenting a situation, the players can say, well, in this situation, I really think that my quick wits are going to come in handy here, or my fast talking, or my my AK-47. You know, everything is worth plus one. So in this case, if I have 2 plus ones, great. In this other situation, if I have 4 plus ones, well, then I'm really cooking. And each of those plus ones will add to the result of the roll. 2d6, 6 and below is a fail, 7 to 9 is a mixed success, and 10 plus is a utter success. Each of those plus ones also counts as sort of, what do they call it, juice? It's like this extra power points. And you can use those to create certain effects. Like if, I think there's a move called change the game or something like that. And you could create like three things. If you had 3 plus ones, you can create like three objects or three differences in the world around you. So the players have a lot of control in how they affect the world. And it's a lot more collaborative between the players and the master of ceremonies than, you know, just one directional GM laying down the rules. So I like that quite a bit. Just seems like there's a lot of promise there. And of late, Son of Oak has kickstarted two new systems using their City of Mist engine. A cyberpunk one called Metro Otherscape, which I already have the PDF for, and a fantasy one called Legend in the Mist. So they're really interesting. There's some great YouTube videos out there that describe it a lot better than I did. So if anyone's even slightly interested, I recommend you check it out. There's doing some cool stuff.
Yeah, the drafting of the attribute cards sounds really interesting as a sort of streamlined, improvised character building. Is that designed for like one shots?
It can. I think it's definitely amenable to one shots. Like I'm reading through the Metro Otherscape book right now, and then there's like a full custom. There's like more random, or there's like a quick play, I think they called it. And in the quick play rules, they basically give you like a thematic set of 4 of those cards, and 3 of the 4 tag options are selected for you. So you just have to pick one each. So like really, okay. Like you're playing in 5 minutes, you're playing in 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot. It's kind of like much better than a pre-gen or something, because you get to put your own twist on it.
Yeah, I, as someone who struggles with character building, I like the idea of that as just a couple of small choices to just tweak it. But otherwise, you're discovering a character, right? So yeah, it sounds interesting. I do like the theme. I'm a big fan of Fables. So, right. Yeah, check that out.
yeah, it's definitely of interest to me. So maybe we'll talk about it again in the future.
Sure, let's take a look.
All right. Any other games you've been playing?
No, I think it's probably about time to wrap this up.
That's right. Let's dive to the other side for our next episode, or wrap up this one.
Yes, yeah, so join us next episode for our featured game discussion on Another Crab's Treasure, the sort of Shoals-like under the sea. So we'll be checking that out. If you have any questions or comments or on this episode or the next, you can email us at omnigamersclub@gmail.com or at our website, omnigamers.club.
Yeah, reach out to us. We'd love to hear what you have to say. And also check us out on YouTube and leave us some comments there.
Yeah, let us know what games you're excited about from the post E3 world. what's gotten you excited?
There you go. All right. Until next episode, have a balanced diet of gaming.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.